Welcome back to the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. This is going to be podcast 562, a little bit of father and son post-debate analysis in podcast 562. So mobile podcast command is just, you know, amazing to me. I've been driving it now, and I think it's probably been about 3,000 miles from where I started out in Minneapolis and St. Paul all the way down here to Los Angeles, California. And, of course, it came from xgovernmentcars.com, the mobile podcast command ambulance, which is a Ford 450 Super Duty 2000, I think, diesel. I love this thing. And I got to tell you, xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer that specializes in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. So if you need an SUV, if you need a work truck, you need something like an F-350, you know, or an E-350, they can get it for you. Again, if you need a car or a work truck and you need a loan, if you've got a job, you can get approved. X-Government Cars also takes trades. I've seen Ed pay the highest values all the time without all the bull. Don't forget the three-day love-it guarantee exclusively at X-Government Cars. Ed Johnson has a great company over there. They got the Crown Vicks, they got the Chargers, they've got the police SUVs, you know, which are 4 inches shorter in terms of profile than the standard Ford Explorers, and of course the Ford Police sedans and the Chevy Impala V8s. Get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com and don't forget the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at xgovernmentcars.com. Now open at Nevada Avenue in Golden Valley, 2420 Nevada Avenue North. If you want to call them old school, you can do it 763-777-8782, 763-777-8782. And yeah, it's debate night, and I do have the bullhorn.
xgovernmentcars.com.
So okay. Just so everyone knows, I do this radio show, the Bob Davis Podcast radio show, and I post it on the website. And so I'm in Los Angeles with my son. He lives here. He's doing the Millennial Channel. And we just did the radio show. And the radio show is recorded, just so everybody knows. I don't do the radio show live, but it runs like on Sunday night. And because of travel, I have to kind of knock this stuff out. So we had this idea that what we would do is we'd watch the debates. We would do the radio show, which airs on Sunday. So I can't really talk about the debates on Sunday. So we did a whole, I don't even know what we did in that show.
Just some LA travel. We did, you know, just a bunch of stuff. We touched on kind of in a more broad sense, the campaigns, and then, you know, a little bit about some of the more salty stuff in the debates.
And you left them high and dry because you just shoved the knife in as deep as you could on Donald Trump at the end, and we ran out of time.
I guess we're just at that point where it's just like, you just want to shove the knife in now. We're at the end of this grueling election cycle, and it's just like cut the BS. Let's just make a decision and like get this thing on track.
Well, we watched the debate. We just watched the debate, then came out here to the truck. The truck is parked on San Vicente Boulevard. This is the VA hospital. There's guys with VA hospital, what do you call those, wristbands on, sleeping in their cars. You know, I mean, this is the biggest VA hospital in the United States, the biggest VA complex in the United States,
we think.
We're parked about, and it's in Brentwood, where you live, and we're parked like right on the street here.
It is. It's really crazy though, and not to jump right into, you know, issues, but I think I've been doing some local reporting here, and homelessness is a huge issue in Los Angeles, and people think it's because of the weather, but you know what we're seeing right outside this truck is indicative of this larger issue that's been created because Los Angeles has too many people and they haven't built enough housing. And so, you know, it's too expensive to live near the VA or to rent an apartment or to rent a room near the VA. If you're kind
a
of
hotel room would be $500 a night here.
I mean, it'd be insane.
It's ridiculous. You
yeah.
couldn't.
I mean, I live at home. You know, I live with my mom. You know, because it's like, what, I'm going to spend like $1,300 a month if I could live for free? I don't think so.
Well, and you know, right? And we don't need to go too far into that because
no, but I mean, it's
me
like
crazy,
it's indicative of like of a huge rent issue in the city. Not that we need to go all the way into that, but I think it's interesting to see what local issues are affecting different cities across
and
the country.
You saw that when you worked in Washington, that you know, you ended up having to live in an apartment with five other guys,
right? But I mean, the thing
you paid like crazy amounts of money. You paid like $1,100 a month.
Well, I paid $900 a month, but I lived in a windowless room, so I don't know how you want to splice it. But
it's pretty bad.
Yeah, but I mean, and DC has a similar issue because of like the height restrictions. You know, they have a lack of housing stock, but in LA, it's really bad because LA is growing at an insane rate. Like, they're going to add, I think, a quarter of their population in the next 10 or 20. I mean, it's huge numbers of people, like millions of people within the next decade. So,
really?
Yeah. I mean, it's because, you know, there's tech here, there's entertainment here, it's warm, you know, the houses are new. It's, you know, it's like people want to come here. They're like coming here from everywhere.
Well, when I'm just going to say this to people who haven't been out to Los Angeles for any length of time, when you come out here, you want to live here.
It's
and
crazy.
And you suddenly don't care about all the issues. You just want to live here because it's great. It was so this is what I did today. I ran into my friend in Santa Monica, on right on the bluff over the beach, which you look down to Malibu, I guess, right?
Yeah, Palisades and Park, I believe the name is, if you're looking for
Palisades Park. And we sat there and talked for, I don't know, a couple of hours because you were editing and I was just waiting for you. And I got a sunburn, and it was hot. Like I'm still sweating. It's still hot here. So, and I know coming back to Minnesota is going to be like, oh God. And it'll be great for a couple of weeks. I'll be like, oh, this is great. It's cold and No, it's not. And I'm not trying to put down Minnesota, but it's like when you come here, if you're from the Midwest,
you know, it's great for Christmas.
Like,
it's great for New Year's
here.
Eve. No, but I gotta say, like it's funny because if you're in like a coffee shop here, you know you see people all day. They come in and they go out and they're like, dude, like I'm visiting LA right now. They're like talking on the phone or talking to their
friend.
Where
do I get a house?
They're like, I gotta move here. Like it's constant. Like people are just like flocking here like a moth to the flame. Is
oh
that what you call
God.
It?
Well, that's what it is.
And they get burned up in the, you know, in the hell of trying to quote unquote make it or whatever it is that we all do out here.
Well, and everybody's doing some kind of intellectual work, but we watched the debates and then we had to do this radio show where we pretended not to have watched the debates like 3 days ago, right? So we were talking about other stuff. I think it worked out.
I didn't
good.
Do any pretending. That was all you.
But and so now we can actually talk about the debate. So this is really the post radio show podcast,
the post pre radio show podcast debate father son analysis.
Yeah, except it's done before the radio show airs. So we literally just. So it would, if it was really post radio show, it would be Sunday night.
But we wanted to get warmed up. We wanted to give you guys a good podcast, right. And we thought we'll warm up with the radio show. We'll get to the real meat in the podcast,
right? And that's what we're trying to do in this podcast. So and this one's a little bit more relaxed because I've been doing a lot of production podcasts. I call them where there's lots of noise and there's audio and it's a project
when you do something like that.
What did I just do? I did one. Oh, I just did some travelogue stuff, and I threw a storm in from last summer that I recorded and some other stuff. So it's just good to just hang out. So we watched the last debate, and honestly, I'm just finding it highly difficult to talk about this election. It's just awful.
I mean, I think both of us are kind of burned out. We've sliced it and diced it every way we can. We've watched, and I mean, I listen and watch way too much news coverage. I'm on my Facebook feed all the time. All the pages I like are news pages. I'm just overwhelmed with election coverage. But we're going to just dole it all out in the podcast right now, aren't we?
Well, I mean, first of all, in lieu of, and I will have to do it, but I'm gonna stay true to my pledge and wait until the end of the month to do the state-by-state analysis and then do it again on November 6th or 7th. So I'm not gonna talk too much about the state-by-state polls. But
I think what we're here to update, we're here to just like give some reflections on how we see it, what you might not be hearing in the
two
in
different
the cable
generations,
news here, right?
Two different generations talking about what they saw because yeah. My first debate, the first debate I ever saw on television was Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy, and I was probably four, maybe even younger, and my parents called me into their bedroom where they had the TV, and. I watched that debate, and I watched
Nixon
Kennedy. That
is fascinating, because the first debate I remember watching was on my laptop. It was, I don't even know where I got it, but it was when I lived in Chicago when I first had a laptop, and it was the 2000 presidential primary debates between, like, the 17 Republican people that were running then. Like, John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, and I think Mitt Romney was in the mix back then.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There
yeah.
were, you know, and I was like, who are all these people? And, like, what is going on? And why are they all talking about all this crazy stuff? Not that Republicans are crazy.
So my first debate was on a really shaky black and white television that had the rabbit ear antennas that my dad had to keep moving to get the station. And it was Richard Nixon and and sorry, I just hit the microphone. Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy.
And that was the one, right, that demonstrated. Where he sweated. Yeah, well, like if you listened to it, you thought Nixon won. If you watched it, you thought Kennedy won.
Right, that's right.
That's really interesting. I don't think the first one I watched will be as historic.
And my dad was a solid Nixon man.
No, but it's weird because the one I watched, I was cleaning my room and the thing was on in the background and I just was like, okay, like I got to listen to this because I think it's important. So it's really different. Like it wasn't a whole production where everyone got in, you know, got set
up.
Well,
there you go.
Really interesting.
Fast forward to tonight, the third debate between the two worst candidates produced by the two-party system in probably 100 years.
By the way, which we use
TiVo
technology to view, so I don't know how we're doing with that, but...
Well, you didn't have to tell them that, but okay. We took a walk through LA, which if you listen to the radio show, you'll hear we don't need to rehash that. And then we went home and ate nuts and some kind of crackers because I'm trying not to eat carbs, but apparently I did. We had Thai food, which involves rice. and
one of the best Thai places.
Fabulous.
In
what's it called?
The country.
What's it called?
It's called Emporium Thai.
Okay, just so you know.
Or and Thai Emporium.
Wilshire.
I actually don't know the exact name.
It's on Wilshire,
I go to
right?
it all the time. It's on Westwood.
That's right, Westwood. Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's great, though. It's been featured on CNN. They have an Instagram feed playing in the restaurant of all the amazing food that people Instagrammed with.
Oh, that's what that was. Okay.
Yeah, and everyone's like, love you, Emporium Thai, or whatever it is.
I awesome. Love Instagram. Great picture. Wow.
And the waitresses are awesome. They're like, hey, how's it going? And then they just like shove you in a corner and you don't have to worry about, you know, having to do a whole back and forth. So it's great.
Then we came back and we watched the debate with the dog and the cat. And we concluded that the cat was for Clinton and the dog was for Trump.
Well, the dog just seemed really interested in Trump for some reason. I don't know.
That's because his face. What is with the guy's face?
It's really weird because last time in the last debate, Hillary Clinton had like a weird. There was a weird thing going on with her face, and it looked like there was like kind of a different face on top and a different face on bottom. And then in this,
she was having a stroke. That's what was.
I'm not
going to
back that up, but in this debate, like Trump looked super weird, and she looked perfect, and I was like, what is going on? Like this is so weird.
I don't know. I like the cream dress, and I liked Chris Wallace. I thought Chris Wallace did a fantastic job as a moderator.
I hate to say substantive because I don't think we've ever really breached that, but it was, I'll say, more substantive than the last ones.
We just spent I don't know how long in the last radio show talking about the thing that drives me the craziest about Trump is he doesn't tell you how we're going to do any of this stuff. He just throws all this stuff out, and it's just like, wait a second. We're going to grow the economy by 4% or maybe 6 or maybe 5. And we're going to do it because we're going to deregulate. Okay, I'm for that. We're going to cut taxes. Okay, I'm for that. Even if it's for rich people, I don't have a problem with that. But okay, doesn't say anything about cutting the budget. Well, it's going to add $20 trillion to the budget, which this is the whole, you know, it's their money. And if we give you a tax cut, then the budget deficit's going to go up.
Honestly,
there's no discussion of cutting spending.
I would never
believe. Let me just finish.
Okay, sorry.
So then he says, and we're gonna pay for it because we're going to make these people that we're defending pay us back. And it's like, what?
Well, as I mentioned in the radio show, it's like, what are we running like a you know, Roman tribute system or like Greek
Apparently.
Tribute system? Because I'm not down with that. That's not what
I
signed
up
for.
A little bit, because I think it's really important that people understand this foreign policy question, because we do get benefits from our defense agreements worldwide. We may not get direct payments from South Korea, and if they're supposed to pay us, that's great. But people hear that we give Egypt $7 billion. We quote give Egypt $7 billion. They don't realize that a lot of times those gifts, those foreign trade agreements, are valued at such and such because it involves agreeing to sell them packages of weapons that they pay for. Like, and when we talk about weapon systems, let's say it's an upgrade for the F-16As that they have to make them F-16Gs or to make them F-16Ds, whatever technology we agree to sell them, whether it's Israel or somebody else. So when they say something, we're giving them this much money in aid, I'm not sure that we're actually giving them cash to begin with. But foreign aid accounts for about 2% of the United States budget. So when you go to look for something to cut, foreign aid, we're probably actually getting the best deal that you could get in terms of anything that's spent from foreign aid. But if you want to cut money for the budget, you have to go to health, education, education and welfare, or, you know, housing and urban development, you know, to cut the budget. You don't get it from foreign aid because we don't, it's not that much of the budget.
I mean, I think a lot of it is in the safety nets, but I don't think you know, whether you want to cut it or not, those are the areas that need the most work to become long-term, you know, sufficient to fund themselves. So that's where the money, I think, is largely, you know, being wasted. Obviously, there's a lot of waste in the military as well. It's one of the higher.
But this isn't specifically the military. This is foreign aid. You're saying the military budget.
I'm just saying, like, I'm just saying, I think it's like, it's kind of ridiculous to put foreign aid on the chopping block if you're not going to talk about military spending or safety net spending.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing about substance that you don't hear from Donald Trump when he says we're going to do this stuff. He's and I can't even imitate the way the guy talks. I can't this and as a
well, you're not using the word fantastic enough.
You know, as a quote unquote conservative, which I hate the term because it doesn't describe anything anymore. You know, what am I? I am a market anarchist. I would like to try somewhere, a state, a place, somewhere that didn't have a government. By the way, speaking of that, so Spain's government has been shut down for the last year or so, and their economy is the fastest growing economy in Europe. So they have shut down their government.
I'm going to no comment on that.
They
I don't know
have
about
a government.
That. I don't know enough about that.
And their economy is growing like 7%. So that sounds like Trump. But I mean, he doesn't say how he's going to do stuff. He's like, I'm going to tear up these agreements. You tell me about how do you tear up NAFTA?
Well, I honestly don't know how you tear up NAFTA. I don't even know if he can tear up NAFTA. Maybe he can, or maybe he can do a bunch of stuff to make it really hard to actually to meet our obligations. But all that aside, it would be bad for the economy, point blank, and it would be bad for the economy to also, you know, reduce our involvement in NATO or not live up to the agreement that we've made with other countries to, you know, provide mutual defense in NATO. And I think it's super crazy and super reckless.
It is. Yeah. Well, now you sound like her.
No, I mean, I hate to sound like, I hate that this is a partisan thing to say. It shouldn't even be a partisan talking point.
Did I make the point at the beginning of the podcast that I don't want to be put in the box of defending Trump? But now I'm kind of defending her because she at least is able to talk about policy in a mature manner with some substance to it. I don't agree. I want people to understand I'm not promoting Hillary Clinton. I don't agree with her politics on almost anything, and I really don't even like her foreign policy. But he does not tell me what he's going to do.
Well,
am I crazy?
And what he does suggest, I mean, it would be very, very, very bad for our long-term interests, to use Trump language. Very sad.
Very sad.
No, it'd be very bad for our long-term foreign policy interests to reduce our involvement in NATO and to, you know, tear up NAFTA, because we have other rising powers or resurgent powers: Russia, China, India, Brazil. Brazil less so now.
They will step into
the mix. They want there to be a vacuum so that they can you know, curry favor
with
countries that are traditionally in our court. And, you know, I don't see China as an adversary. I see China as a friend. But, you know, there is a realist foreign policy exchange kind of going on, right? Or a realist foreign policy, I don't know, what do you call it, exchange, battle, whatever you want to call it. I mean,
we're in a realist world when it comes to China.
Well, I mean,
there's a
lot of ways to look at this stuff, but there is undoubtedly a competition going on between the United States and China. And if we pull back, they're going to step in. And, you know, TPP is, you know, the perfect example of this, where we have a chance to right now engage in strong trade agreements and trade ties with, you know, East Asian nations and other Pacific nations. And we can either do that and be a building block in their economies, or we cannot do that and allow other nations to step in.
What about the idea that these trade agreements do not benefit the United States, that they're poorly negotiated, and we end up giving up too much? You said something to me a long time ago. You said the first thing you have to understand about international trade is that we come up with trade agreements because generally foreign countries are trade protectionists. And so the idea of trade agreements is to break down foreign trade protection, not necessarily U.S. trade protection. We're generally not trade protectionist in this country. We've never been. We've always been free traders, pretty
much.
Well,
I don't know if I agree with everything you're saying there, but what I will say.
You said it. I didn't.
Well, I don't think I said it quite like that, but that's okay. This is where we get into our little back and forth. No.
This is where we would start screaming at each other on the phone. It's a completely different conversation when we're face to face.
It's a lot better when
coast to coast.
Well, when you're driving and there's background noise, you know, we can blame it on all that because we love each other.
We do.
But to get back to the question, I think, you know, we haven't always been free traders, and trade doesn't always benefit everyone in the country, but the idea that trade hasn't benefited the United States is crazy, because if you look at when you're buying something that's made in another country, that's because we're trading for it and we're getting it for a lower price from another country.
What's the benefit? As John Tamney once said, you know, you have to also include the benefit. When you talk about getting cheap goods from China, you have to talk about the benefits of the cheap goods that you're buying, that you're saving, you know, hundreds of dollars a year, let's say.
Well, it's like, do you want a TV and a sofa and frying pans, or do you just want frying pans? Like, that's what we're talking about here. Do you want to make buckets, or do you want to, you know, build computer programs?
Value-added stuff.
You know, it's like,
we talked about, during the debate, we were talking about America's industrial output, which is greater than it's ever been, with fewer people. So his characterization that we've sent all of our industrial output overseas really isn't...
Yeah, I don't think that that's really true. And I also think, ideally, we don't want to just send bad jobs overseas, but we want to be trading with other nations for high-value goods. So we want to trade, you know, our airplanes for their computer programs, or vice versa. You know, that's what we want. So the goal is to get everyone to a higher level, and that will happen because it's happened before. You know, why we have all the stuff we have now is because we have deep trade. The reason that our houses have more stuff in them now and are larger than they have ever been before is because of foreign trade. And we're benefiting. Even the dude who has, you know, a 2012, you know, Sahara or whatever in his garage, who is apparently like this disaffected, you know, white dude who's uneducated and voting for Trump, as they all say, you know, on the cable channels when they talk about the quote-unquote Trump voter, like, that guy has also benefited from foreign trade, even though maybe he lost his job to foreign trade. So it's a complicated, it's not always black and white, but I think the idea that we're being taken advantage of in our trade deals is tough to prove on a wide level and a long-term level, although obviously within, like, each specific deal, you know, maybe there's a few points here or there we didn't get exactly what we wanted. But I think it's a crazy reason to step back from all of these trade deals. And to just say one more thing, you know, we talked about in one of our other podcasts how long these agreements take to negotiate. So you use something like TTP. So why am I calling it TTP tonight? It's TPP.
Well, there is a T. There's a TTP and a T.
TTIP.
TTIP. That's right.
Okay. But... So I'm not hitting either of them, but no. If you have something like TPP, you know, it's taken probably over, you know, I should know the specific number, but probably over a decade of at least informal talks to negotiate. You don't want to just throw that out the window, you know, because we're having a tough election cycle.
So when he becomes president and he says I told the American people that we were going to get rid of NAFTA. And he walks in and says to whoever, I don't know, the dude in the outside office, we got to get rid of NAFTA. How are they going to do that?
Well, first of all, I don't think he is, even if he gets elected. But that's another question.
All right, let's jump to that, because we really should talk about that before the end of the podcast, because I think that's really important. So we were talking also tonight, the state-by-state situation, and I don't want to go through every state, really doesn't look good for Donald Trump right now. I mean, you know, in the wake of the tape and the first and second debates, he's struggling in Florida. He's struggling in doing a little bit better in Ohio. There was a recent poll that had him up by 0.7, but he was up by 4 points in Iowa before the tape was released. Pennsylvania was lost, but her lead is widened in Pennsylvania. Her lead is widened in Virginia. North Carolina, it was actually a toss-up, and now she's doing much better in North Carolina. And then that's where Richard Burr is, which is he's potentially one of the Republican Senate seats that could flip. Colorado is probably lost at this point. Arizona and Nevada. So things don't look good for him. But I said,
well, I will say for the debate tonight, I think we're going to see a little bit of a bounce from this debate. He came out, he did a good job, and that's a lot coming from me. I don't give him very many passes.
He did better in this debate.
He did a good job. He stayed on point. He clearly prepared. His mannerisms, although a little bit,
his facial expressions were
sporadic.
Great.
But he stayed in one place. He wasn't stalking Hillary Clinton. You know, so the guy, I think, did what he needed to do to get his people. His people on board with him, and maybe grow up a little bit from that kind of bare bones base level that he's now been bashed back down to with the sex tapes.
And every day that goes by,
the tapes that have him talking about sex stuff with women.
And I didn't even apologize to Melania, who's sitting in the front row.
That was crazy, because he said he didn't apologize to Melania, but then Melania said he did apologize to her, to him. What am I saying?
And to the kids.
Melania, in her CNN interview, said that he apologized to her. And then in the debate, he said he didn't apologize to her. So I don't know what that means.
Who knows?
Clearly someone's lying or just oblivious.
That's not right.
That's
wrong.
No.
No. Yeah, that was the other one. No. It was just, you know, oh my God.
But I think he did. He landed some important, you know, some important blows on, you know, I think his most effective point, and this is painful for me to say, but I think it's most effective is when he talks about her being, you know, in office for 30 years and getting little done. I don't think
she turned that around pretty good though.
Well, she did. I mean, I think that she actually probably won the debate in that response.
Points. Yeah.
But that point I think is very understandable and is really very valid for people who do feel like they're not being included in growth and, you know, people who feel that things are going badly. I mean, why hasn't she had a better track record? You know, why hasn't she been able to say, I did this and found a solution to these problems?
Well,
you know, if it's really interesting, if you watch the Reagan...
My own personal feeling is that she's a statist. She believes in state solutions. She's been a player in an effort. She's been basically punching her ticket to get to the point where she can run for president. And this brings me to my point about the state-by-state polls. So we were talking tonight about, you know, the possibility that there's a wild card vote that is unexpected, that the polls really aren't showing the support for the potential of a Trump victory. I think if that happens, and I will get, you know, I have two more state-by-state poll shows, one right at the end of October and one right before the election. So if he is within striking distance, my general opinion has been, if a Republican isn't 4 or 5 points ahead in the key states on Election Day, he's not going to win. And I think Romney is the best example of that. Everyone thought he could. He could do it. He's close. But if you're not ahead of a Democrat, they're going to do better getting the vote out.
Well, interesting thing.
What if it's reversed for Trump this time around, where he's behind, but somehow when people actually vote, he wins those. He wins. Even if it's by 1%, he wins some of those key states.
Well, here's a really interesting thing is I read an article, and I believe it was in Politico. I got to double check that. But, you know, for now, we'll just go with Politico.
Okay.
But it talked about how the Romney team feels that they lost the election in the final days when they failed to get the vote out because of issues with their organization that they didn't basically foresee. And I think that that's important because if you look at the Trump campaign, which is—
In other words, their get-out-the-vote campaign that they didn't realize.
In other words, like they had it. They could have. They had it until 2 weeks before when they didn't get everyone out to vote. And I mentioned that because in the same article, they talked about how the Trump campaign has struggled to do things as basic as getting yard signs to people, has struggled to do things as basic as building voter databases, has struggled to do things as basic as prepping their candidate for a debate.
It's an entirely rhetorical campaign.
Right, and that might help, and maybe it can bring people out that wouldn't have come out otherwise, but I think it's important to remember that, like, this guy has not done any of the things that you need to do in a professional campaign to win, and I think it's tough to expect that he's going to get this, like,
well, I mean, that's,
you know,
why I'm not
hand of God victory.
I'm not predicting.
Not you. I'm just saying,
but if that's why I call it the wild card, because if somehow he, I'm watching this debate tonight, and I'm thinking, you know, it's not resonating with me because I don't believe what he's saying because I want to hear what he's going to do and I don't think he knows personally. And so what I'm hearing is more and more state-sponsored solutions to problems, which is how we got in this position in the first place. I honestly feel that we should cut the government by 50% completely. We ought to fire people to in the max, shut down the whole departments, and cut the budget by 50% and get ahead 2 years. You know, and people think I'm crazy when I say that. So I'm totally against any of these big government solutions to problems, Republican or Democrat. I don't like the Republicans. I don't think the Republicans stand for anything. Blah, 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 blah. Everybody's heard me say that.
We've heard it
100 times.
We get it.
And nobody wants to hear it anymore. Fine. But I'm sitting there watching Trump and listening to Trump thinking, so forget about you, Bob Davis, and forget about you, Andrew Davis. What if this guy really is connecting with a lot of people and somehow rhetorically he's able to generate those people or push those people out to vote on Election Day?
I personally think if he was, we'd be seeing it in some indicator in reputable polling.
A lot of Trump signs in Montana and Idaho and northern Washington.
A lot. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. You know, there's, you know, he's still polling at like 40-something percent. So there's people out there who support him, but in these key growing demographics, specifically educated white women, which isn't necessarily growing, but it's a key demographic.
Right.
You know, he's really struggling, and he doesn't need 40, he needs 51.
And at one point he did have the women.
Let's be honest, he needs like, what, like 49, whatever that little, you know, he just needs to get, because it's never really 100, but
he doesn't
total.
Here's what he needs. He needs plus 2 in Ohio. He needs plus 5 in Florida. He needs plus 2 in North Carolina. He needs Georgia. He needs plus 5 in
Arizona. I think it's troubling when you see him trailing everywhere. And it's not a Brexit trail, which everyone, like this Brexit thing came out of nowhere and that could happen with Trump.
No, it's 4 points.
It's, yeah, Brexit was basically break even.
It was 50-50.
A little bit in favor of stay.
Right.
And they ended up voting to leave the European Union.
No, if we get to that close, and I don't know if we're going to get there, but I listened to him tonight and I thought, what if he is actually really reaching people? And what if there is just a big surprise on election day?
You know, I would totally be open to that if we were talking about the election 6 months ago, when this guy was coming out of nowhere and was like on fire and was like, his Instagram account was distributing his commercials.
We said they'll find a horse's head somewhere that he...
And they did. They did find a horse's head somewhere. It was, you know, a tape about him talking about grabbing women's
and
somethings.
Then the rumor is that there's even worse stuff on the Apprentice tapes. So,
which Mark Burnett conveniently can't release. It's ridiculous. Like, just pay the fine, whatever. Do it. Let's hear what you got. No. Where are we at? Where are we?
Well, we're just finishing up with the wild card. That is there going to be a wild card in this where you'd say it's just unexpected? Okay, you were there. We were in Chicago the night that the Cubs almost won the World Series, and we're right back in the same spot with the Cubs and the Dodgers. And I don't remember even who we were playing that night that Steve, what's his name, caught the ball.
Oh, I remember where we at. Can I just say that was crazy, by the way? And we were in that diner, and everyone's just sunk. It was just
it was just like election night.
It was like boom.
But for a minute there, it was just star-crossed. We were in this diner, and you know,
it was like a 60s looking diner.
Like, girls were dancing with cops, and everybody
it was amazing.
Just like, we're gonna win the World Series! Oh my god! And then that whole thing happened, and it was just like a wild card. They had it 6 months ago. Were saying
they're talking about him on fire. Da da da.
Yeah, and you would have said now, but not now.
Yeah, I mean, so if we're talking about this 6 months ago, again, I would be like, it's possible this guy is pulling stuff out of hats. But I think what we've seen since he won the primary is that when he's been in the general phase, the general election phase with Hillary Clinton, when he is pulled away from conventional politics, from conventional teleprompter speeches, he has lost support amongst that key swing voter group that he needs to win. And I know, especially on this podcast, we don't like talking about swing voters and middle ground people and people with weak spines who don't have an opinion. But the problem is, you know, even if I don't necessarily think that they have weak spines, etc., because I'm in that group. But, you know, the thing is, they're needed to win an election, and that's just a fact of electoral politics.
You think she'll get the swing
voters. And I think what she's doing right now is she is appealing to people who skew a little bit right of center, as well as everyone who's on the left, because those people are terrified of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is appealing to a narrower group, and you can hear that tonight in the debate. I mean, when she talks about Donald Trump and the issue with the tapes, where he talks about, you know, again, grabbing women in very inappropriate places.
Which he did not mention on he said, not true, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but you notice she didn't say you victimized them. She said he is made bigger in his own mind by belittling women, something to that extent. And I think that's a really interesting like turn of phrase, because what she's saying is she's not saying that they're victims and that, oh, it's like so politically incorrect what he said. What she's saying is that he's a terrible human being. He's a terrible human being who, like, in a crazy, horrible way, like, gets off on making women feel small and unimportant. And that is, I think, something that pulls in people from the right that might feel like that's an inappropriate thing for a respectful man to do.
Oh, I see.
You know, you should be, even if you do have a paternalistic view of the world, you would want to be, you know, a loving guiding force in people's lives who are women, not, you know, someone who belittles people for women for pleasure. So that's
not true. I didn't do that.
I think it's really interesting though, she did that throughout the entire debate in the Roe v. Wade thing. Her argument was not, abortion is the greatest thing in the world. It was, you know, it was that
you gotta suck the baby out of the womb.
Terribly, absolutely terrible moment of the debate. But her argument was that the government shouldn't make those decisions for women. Again, it's about big government.
That was weird.
And it's about women's rights. So she's really carefully, clearly, multiple times even in that debate, navigated these issues in a way that can pull people in from maybe, you know, the center right.
See, and I'm challenging that. I'm saying those are calculated political positions, and we'll have to leave it here. Those are calculated positions. They make a lot of sense to people like us who are political analysts. But what if there's a wild card that we're not seeing?
I mean, the thing is, again, I'd be down with the wild card thing, except for the fact that every time he's gone the quote-unquote wild card route, he's lost support. So he, you know what he did tonight? He came out and did the say, play it safe, be a politician route. And it was weird because that's not who he is. And his face,
except for
doing,
the facial expression.
His face was doing crazy things. And, you know, he was like, no. And he was screwing with the microphone. And, you know.
Once he was like.
You know, it was like, oh, no, like, don't blame that on the debate commission, people. You know, but anyways.
So. My microphone isn't working properly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just. It's like, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. But I don't think that the wild card's happening right
so,
now.
I'm getting ready to go to Phoenix. You want to go with me?
Maybe.
You could fly back.
What are we going to do with the dog and the cat? Who's going to vote for Trump for the dog?
Well, the cat we can leave. The dog can come with us. Well, no, you'd have to take the dog on the plane.
The cat will probably die if I leave her here alone.
Really?
She doesn't like when we leave. She freaks out.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'm going by myself.
You could take the cat too, though. You get to hear her all night in the car.
All right, well, it's good doing a podcast with you.
Fun time. It's great to be on the Bob Davis podcasts.
Absolutely. Well, I guess I'm going to get on to Phoenix because you're not coming with me, so I got to go by myself. Don't forget, xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in these one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. I've had 3 Crown Vics and now, of course, Mobile Podcast Command. They pay the highest values every day for trades without all the bull. They have great financing. xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley, 763-777-8782. Boom.
XGovernmentCars.com.
Thanks to the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcasts. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems' mission is to make sure that you pilots fly safe. That's what the AOA is all about. It's basically this. As you know, lift is what keeps airplanes in the air, and a lot of pilots think that they can feel when they're kind of making that final turn to the runway, but sometimes if you don't have enough lift, you can get yourself into trouble very quickly, and this is why they say fly safe. The AOA indicator just simply gives you a visual indicator of the amount of lift underneath your aircraft, and that is how you fly safe. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. I'm getting tired and I still got to drive to Phoenix at the Bob Davis podcasts.com. And of course, I got to say thanks to everybody for contributing. I do have one more person's name. Let me see if I can quick pull it up on my phone while I'm talking here. Contributions to Mobile Podcast Command have really come in handy for diesel fuel. I'm very quickly trying to get to my email so I can see if I still have this email that someone sent me today. Yeah, here it is. Nope, that's not it. Sorry, that's something else. But Selene Jones, I really appreciate it. She sent me $25. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcasts on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, and for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and now watching the travel videos on YouTube. I am, what's my YouTube handle? The Bob Davis podcasts on YouTube or something like that. So check that out. There's 2 channels. One I put up years ago. I didn't even know what that was. And now the new one with the travel videos. And check that out. Let me know what you think. So from here, it's on to Phoenix. And then we start making our way east across New Mexico. And I'll tell you more about that on future podcasts. A father and son analysis of the election so far and the debate.
I like to rest a heavy head.